You're listening to the Newsmakers podcast from MLB.com.
This is the Rocket, Bill Latson. Welcome to Newsmakers. We have a lot going on today. We have Paul DeJong of the Cardinals. He's one of the reasons they are back in the pennant race. I visited the D-backs recently, and I spoke to Robbie Ray and Paul Goldschmidt. I also had a chat with StatCast guru Andrew Simon and Reds bench coach Jim Riggleman. We start with DeJong. If not for Cody Bellinger, DeJong would be the leading candidate for the NL Rookie of the Year. Enjoy the podcast. On the phone is Paul DeJong. He's a slugger for the St. Louis Cardinals. I got to tell you, if Cody Bellinger wasn't around, he would be the leading candidate for Rookie of the Year. Paul, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Paul, from what I read, this is the first time you've played shortstop every day. Talk about how much you enjoy playing the position.
I think shortstop's my natural position. Really, I played shortstop growing up all the way through high school, and then when I got to college, I started moving around a little bit more. But you know, I feel comfortable over there making the routine plays, and I feel like it's the best view of the ball, you know, like the angle off the bat, everything. Just I really love playing shortstop, honestly.
Now, you played second base in college, and you played some second base for the Cardinals. How much do you like playing second base?
I like second just a little bit less than shortstop, but, you know, at this point, I'm doing whatever I can to get on the field and get in the lineup, and, you know, I can play multiple positions, but, you know, I'd prefer to stay at shortstop if I got to choose.
Paul, has it hit you what you've done? I mean, you have 20 home runs. You're the first Cardinal to reach that this year, and you're having a great year, batting average-wise, everything-wise. Talk about the year you're having.
Yeah, this has been one of the best years I've had as a baseball player, just the longevity and the accumulation of numbers. And really, it's really just come down to taking it day by day. I'm not really trying to look forward too far into the future. I'm just trying to focus on today. And, you know, really fortunate to have gotten my chance back in May to get called up, and really haven't looked back since then.
Well, you have been successful in the minors and in college. Why has it carried over in the majors, you think?
I think it's my ability to, you know, control my emotions and be able to reset the next day and come out with a new goal or whatever and a new purpose for the day and get it done. And, you know, I don't get too high, too low. I try to stay even keel. And in baseball, I think that really, really factors in.
Now, you're a rookie. What's the biggest thing you've learned while in the major leagues, something that you didn't learn while in the minors or in college?
It's about winning up here. Any way we can get a win in the big leagues is a great day. And I'm finding that it's tough to win in the big leagues. You think even the worst teams in the other divisions that we rarely play, and you know, you lose a game and you're like, wow, we shouldn't have lost them. And you know, it's just little things like that, you know, and when you look at how you lost the game, it comes down to even more of the little things, the base running, defense, and you know, execution. So really the game's a little more intense up here, and the end result of a win or a loss is definitely the main factor.
The Cardinals are back in the race. How far can they go now? I know they need to improve their pitching. But how far can this team go? You guys have a chance to win the Central. You guys are in the wild card race as well. Talk about that.
Yeah, I think we got a lot of games left, it seems like, and a lot of games in the division. So it'll be time to make up ground. But, you know, really, we went on an 8-game win streak. You know, I think that team's still in us. I think we still have that ability. So, really, I think we just need to start winning more consistently and definitely on the road. And, you know, with a little bit of help, you never know, you know, at the end of September where those standings will be. And, you know, I think if we play together as a team, that we definitely have a chance. It's not over yet.
If not for Cody Bellinger, you would be the leading candidate for Rookie of the Year. Do you follow Cody Bellinger at all? And do you follow any rookie right now? Talk about that.
Yeah, Cody, friend of mine. You know, what he's doing does not surprise me in the slightest. he's a great player, and he's, you know, he's putting up ridiculous numbers. But, yeah, I'm just trying to focus in on the team here and the Cardinals and the way that we win and the way we play. And, you know, I see around the league what's going on. But, you know, I think that I'm just as good as some of these other players. And just given the opportunity, I'll show them that, you know, I can – play in this league for a while, and that's what I'm trying to do every day here.
Any improvements you would like to make as far as your own game?
Yeah, definitely keep working on defense. I think defense is something you can be improved year to year. And as far as hitting goes, I think plate discipline is definitely a factor for me. And I think it's the process of hitting that will drive down my strikeout numbers and drive up my walk numbers. And then with that, all other numbers will improve as well. So really it's just trying to control the strike zone is my big goal as a hitter.
Now, you left an impression on the Cardinals during spring training. What did you do then to make them say, hey, this guy can be in the big leagues?
I think just the way I played on the field, but also the way I carry myself. I'm always asking questions, trying to learn and trying to, get more information because I'm never satisfied. And I think they just saw the determined side of me, and they just thought they could use me up here. And, really I feel right at home up here in the St. Louis, and I feel like I belong here.
Now, I want everybody to know, Paul DeJong is a smart kid. This guy was going to medical school, if not for baseball. Paul, I got to ask you, how much do you like science and medicine?
Yeah, going into college, not sure how far baseball was going to take me, but I set myself up to have a good degree at the end of it, so I ended up graduating with a biochemistry degree. And it was challenging for a bit at the end of the years because we were traveling so much in the spring, missing class, still taking the hard classes or whatever. But, I always thought baseball was going to, it's my true love, but I set myself up with a nice backup plan, but I don't think I'll ever have to go back to it now.
I was going to ask you, once your baseball career is over, do you plan to be a doctor?
At this point, no, but you never know what can happen down the road. I still have to take the MCAT and apply and all that stuff, but being a major leaguer might help me out in that regard. But, I always enjoyed, the sciences and thought the lifestyle of a doctor would be a pretty good thing for me. So, whatever I want to do in life, I just want to do it at the highest level and be at the top.
Illinois State must have taught you discipline, because not only did you have a great baseball career, I mean, you did well in school, too. Talk about Illinois State.
Yeah, I think it's just work ethic carries over into all facets of my life, and, baseball definitely included. But, yeah, the 5 a.m. wake-ups for the lifting in the fall for 4 years definitely, instilled that in me, the drive and the work ethic and then the camaraderie with the teammates, all that stuff factors in to where I'm at now. And Illinois State was definitely a big part of my development.
Talk about your parents. You obviously have good parents, and they taught you a lot, I'm sure.
Yeah, my parents have been wonderful. They've been there every step of the way, starting with my dad, fostering a love for baseball at age of five and signing me up and coaching me up through all the way up until high school. And then, just traveling to tournaments and equipment, you name it, everything that I needed, they provided. And to be able to share it with them right now, it's been one of the best feelings. They were at my debut in Colorado, and just to be able to see that home run, and it's like it's just a big, big joy for all of us to experience together.
Is it a dream still?
Some days I have those moments like, wow, I'm in the big leagues. But for the most part, at this point in the season, it's August. I'm worried about taking care of my body and figuring out how to play today, sticking to my routine. But when I first got called up, man, the height of the stadiums, the guys I was playing against, all these things were a big shock to me. But I think I'm over that now, and I'm starting to prove that I'm just as good as everyone else up here.
Now, I got to ask you this. Now, do you get people, do you have people who mispronounce your name?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a Dutch name. It's a pretty common name in the Netherlands from what I found. And that's one of the reasons why I had to change my Twitter handle to Real Paul DeJong, because if you search Paul DeJong on Twitter, you'll get, it looks, seems like hundreds of of profiles with that name. And so really it's just one of those things that carried down throughout my family, but it's really easy to say once you know how to say it.
Right, right. Now, listen, I just want to say thank you so much for being on the show. I had a blast, and I've learned a lot about you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Take care.
My next guest is Robbie Ray of the D-backs. He had a scary situation recently, and he's happy to be back on the field. Here's what he had to say. Enjoy the podcast. Robbie Ray, thank you so much for being on the show. First of all, how good is it to be back on the field?
Yeah, it feels really good. You know, I'm ready to get back out there and help the team out.
Will you be on what I call an innings limit at any chance when you get back on the field?
I don't think so. I threw in a rehab game, 80 pitches, a little over, I think it was 4 2/3.
Mm-hmm.
So I should be good for a full game.
When did you realize that everything was going to be all right after you were hit in that?
Honestly, right after I got hit.
No kidding.
Yeah, no. I hit the ground and my ears were ringing a little bit, but I felt fine. I know some guys have some lingering effects from it, but
yes.
I felt good.
Were you surprised you were out? You were out a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I knew it was. I mean, I had a concussion. I knew I had that, but I knew ultimately I was going to be okay. It just took a couple of weeks for those final symptoms to kind of wear off.
Talk about how much your family helped you through this.
Yeah, my wife was there throughout the whole thing. She actually flew out to St. Louis that night
on
the last flight.
She cares.
Yeah, she does, and she's a great woman. She's been with me throughout this whole process. My son, he's been awesome. He's like my best friend.
No kidding.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Asher.
What does he say through all this? I know he's a little kid.
Yeah, well, he's 2 years old, so he doesn't really talk a whole lot, but he's, it's just being able to walk in the door at home and, mm-hmm. and see his smiling face every time and know that, you know, daddy's okay. It's been good.
That helps you through it, huh?
It does, yeah.
Wow. Despite the injury, you're having your best year. Why is that? And, you're an all-star.
Yeah, no, the team's been behind me really, throughout this whole thing. They've been hitting really well. We're a great offensive team.
Mm-hmm.
Making plays, we're doing a lot better than we have in the past. And
mm-hmm.
honestly, as a pitching staff, we have kind of a little competition going between all of us.
You know?
I mean, it's a healthy competition.
Mm-hmm.
Every time a guy goes out there like Patrick did last night and goes up, puts up, you know, 8 strong innings, the next guy wants to come in and do the same or better. So, you know, I think it's a good thing that we have going, and we're just looking to keep it rolling.
Despite the one loss record last year and the year before, there were signs that you were going to be a really good pitcher. When did you realize, you know, when did you say, yes, I'm going to make it here?
Last year, you know, with the strikeout totals that I had, I saw a glimpse of it. And I had games last year where, you know, I could see that things were going really well. But it was just a matter of putting it all together. And in spring, I felt really confident in all three of my pitches. And adding the curveball was huge for me. Just adding an extra pitch just gave me another weapon to use.
I say, with Robbie Ray back, this team's going to go far. What do you say?
Hopefully. You know, hopefully I can do my job and go out there and put up zeros like I know how to do, and we can make a push.
How far can this team go? It's a pretty good team, but a tough division.
Yeah, you know, we're taking it one day at a time, going out and just doing our job. You know, that's the mm-hmm. biggest thing we can do is control what we can control. And we can only control what happens in this clubhouse and on that field, so... we're just going to do that.
Tell me what it's like to play for Torrey Lovello.
It's great. Yeah, he's a great manager. He's very open, and I feel like that's key. The communication back and forth is big, and he lets us know how he feels, and we let him know how we feel.
What did he say during spring training, or what did he do that made this team say, we're a good team, we can go to the postseason?
You know, I think it was just finding our identity,
mm-hmm.
Who we were, and he helped us establish that, and we just kind of, it's just kind of stuck with us the whole year. We knew we were good. We knew, you know, expectations were high the year before, and we kind of didn't do well with that. But we knew we were a good team. Not a whole lot has changed in this clubhouse. So we knew that we could go out and win.
Now, I know that you were named to the All-Star team. Tell me what that was like to be named to the All-Star team. It proved that the Nationals were right with drafting you high and everything. Talk about that.
Yeah, it was awesome. That was really a really cool experience going to the All-Star game and seeing all those guys in that clubhouse. You know, guys that I've looked up to my whole life. Watching them on TV, like, man, I want to be that guy. So it was a really cool experience. And just to be able to be in that room with all those guys was really humbling.
Talking to you right now, you seem so relaxed. I'm not saying you have a worry in the world, but you seem so relaxed.
Yeah, I mean... living the dream out here. Every little kid wants to be a Major League Baseball player, and we get to live that dream out.
Talk about what made you want to be a baseball player.
Just that. I mean, I watched guys growing up. I was always a baseball fan. Went to baseball games, watched it on TV. I wanted to be, you know, those guys playing on TV when I was little. And I set my sights on it, and here I am.
Who helped you get here?
You know, my family, everybody in my family, my coaches, everybody that supported me, the fans, just believing in me, and you know, God for giving me this gift. You know, it's a great gift that He's given me, and I'm very thankful for it.
Despite the record you had the previous 2 years, the fans in Arizona saw what you can do. How grateful that they saw what you can do.
Yeah, it's great. You know, just to be able to give back to the fans a little bit more. You know, they supported us throughout this whole process, and it's great to see them to show up for games. It's great.
Listen, thank you so much.
There you go.
Greatly appreciate it. Paul Goldschmidt is my next guest. This guy is more than just a slugger. He's a complete player. Enjoy the podcast. Paul Goldschmidt, thank you so much for being on the show. My first question to you is, first of all, how good is it to get Robbie Ray back?
Yeah, it'll be nice. You know, it's a very scary moment to be out there and see him, you know, get hit like that. You know, you just are worried even beyond baseball about, you know, maybe anything that could go wrong. So to hear he was okay was a great relief, and now he's, you know, done some rehab, and it'll be fun to get out there and play behind him.
How much of a big help can he be for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I mean, he's been great for us, been an all-star this year, and, you know, really picked us up. A lot of games we haven't scored much, and he's put up a lot of zeros and got us some wins. So our pitching staff's been great this whole year, but to have him back will be a little bit of a boost for us.
This team is having a great year, but you're in a tough division. How far can this team go?
Oh, we'll find out. So, I mean, we're confident in ourselves, but we are also have a lot of respect for the opponents out there, not just in our division, but the other divisions as well. So we know it's a challenge. Every day we go out there, we just try to take it day by day, and, you know, we'll see what happens.
What's the difference between this year and last year? I think everyone expected you guys, you know, to be in the race. You weren't. This year is a different story.
Yeah, I think, you know, we just play better, and it's not really an answer, but our pitching's been really good if you're going to look at one thing on the field. We've been healthy. So, you know, we've had a lot of new guys step up and do great for us, and a lot of veterans come in here and kind of take control, and, you know, they've done a good job for us.
You are having a typical Goldie year, consistency all the way around. Why are you having a good year?
I don't know, just try to go out there and take it day by day. I don't really look too far ahead or live too much in the past, and, you know, especially with how this team's playing, is just, you know, try to go out there and help us win the game tonight, because it's not about me. We're trying to, you know, find a way to get in the playoffs, and if we can do that, you know, try to win the World Series. So I think it makes it a little bit easier, as, you know, not chasing stats or anything individually, but just, man, maybe just go out there and help us.
The one thing I admire about you the most, and this is why your WAR is so high, is your defense and your base running. Talk about the pride you take in both.
Yeah, just try to do the best I can. There's a lot of different ways to help your team win. You know, I was taught that from an early age, and so You know, maybe you don't get the hit or you strike out or whatever, but you can make a diving play out there that can save a run or win the game or, you know, go first to third or score on a base hit. So it's just, you know, whatever I'm doing at that time when I'm on defense, focus on defense, base running, getting hit. And just, like I said, should I go out there and help us win?
I mean, you are dangerous on the base pass. You have over 100 stolen bases, 121 to be exact. And you are dangerous out there, man. I mean, what made you want to steal bases?
I don't know if it's wanting to. It's just you have opportunity to get to the next base. It's easier to score on a single and instead of having to have extra base hits. So the Diamondbacks really preached it in the minor leagues. And I think that's where it started. It wasn't just stealing, but just being a good base runner. Instead of going to first to third, scoring on a single, scoring on a double, stuff like that. And, you know, they didn't just say, hey, you just need to be able to hit or just play defense. Base running was preached and still is preached just as much as the other aspects of the game.
What about Torey Lovullo? This is your first year under him. What do you like about him?
He's been great. You know, he's a great communicator. Everyone talks about that. But I think the biggest thing is he just had a vision for this team and has a vision. He just came in and was a leader right away. And guys kind of they just fell right in behind him and just followed him. And, you know, he's had a vision, like I said, for the way he wants us to play and expects us to play and will make us play. And as long as you do that, play hard, you're not going to have any problems. But he's done a great job.
You guys started winning under him right away. What was it? What did he say during spring training that made you say, yeah, we can do it?
Really? I don't really know if he's really – it wasn't really anything he said. But, you know, he just has a confidence and a demeanor about him and a – you know, he's won with other organizations, and so, you know, he knows what he's doing. He's in charge, and so I just kind of followed him. We're going to go out there and play hard and try to go out there and win every game.
You've come so close to winning the MVP. You finished second twice, and I know awards and stats don't mean much to you, but how much would you like to win an MVP?
I mean, I honestly don't really care that much, but I guess if that happens, it means we made the playoffs. I think those two things usually go hand in hand, and you know it's better not winning it, but it's not something that I'm thinking about or is a goal of mine or anything like that.
Final question: what's ahead for Paul Goldschmidt?
I don't know. We'll find out. Like I said, I just try to take it day by day. I'm just worried about you know the game tonight and trying to prepare for that. And you know, once that's over, just prepare for the next game and just try to keep it simple like that.
Paul Goldschmidt, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it. MLB.com's Andrew Simon is my next guest. He explains why StatCast is important in Major League Baseball. Enjoy the podcast. Every time I look at MLB.com, Andrew Simon is always writing about StatCast. And to me, he is the king of StatCast. And he's on the phone right now. Andrew, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, no problem, Bill. I think I would have to, I'm not sure I deserve a title, but thanks anyways.
Andrew, talk about the importance of StatCast. We're seeing more teams really relying on it, and it's more than just hitting home runs. Talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, teams, I think just about every team is using it as a tool to, you know, evaluate players. I know Anthony Castrovince at MLB.com had an article before the trade deadline about, you know, teams using the data to inform their decisions about what to do before the deadline. I'm sure they're using it, you know, in free agency as well and, you know, to track their own players, you know, because it provides a lot of data on, you know, how hard are players hitting the ball, how fast are they running, what's the velocity and spin of their pitches, you know, about outfield play. There's so many things that it tracks that, you know, it really opens up our understanding of, you know, everything that goes on the field.
What has StatCast taught you the most in terms of the abilities of players, not just the position players, but pitchers as well?
I think one big thing that I'm really enjoying this year, we have a new metric called catch probability for outfielders.
Right.
And so that's really brought, I think, a whole new level to evaluating outfield play. Mm-hmm. Whereas before you might see a guy make a diving catch and say, hey, that play looked good, but you don't have any real way of knowing, did he just make it look good or was it actually a difficult play? And now, because of StatCast, we can look at, you know, how far did he have to travel for that ball? How much time did he have to do it? What direction was he running in? And actually tell, you know, did he just take a circuitous route and then save it with a dive at the end? Or did he really, you know, cover more ground in less time than most outfielders and make a play that nobody else can make?
Wow.
So I think that's something that has really helped me to appreciate, you know, what an outfielder like, you know, a Byron Buxton or a Mookie Betts can bring to the table compared to somebody else.
Now, that's interesting about Buxton because Buxton has a 3.7 WAR, and most of that is, I'm assuming, is based on his defense. Is that correct?
Defense and base running, yeah. That's a lot of it, although he has been hitting a lot better recently.
Right.
But, yeah, for the season, you know, if you can play a center field at a high level, and he's certainly one of the best out there, that's something that carries a tremendous amount of value. So, you know, obviously the StatCast data isn't something that goes into that WAR total yet, but certainly what StatCast has found is something that matches up with other defensive metrics that we have that suggest he's a really good center fielder.
Now, I've seen you write your share of StatCast stories. Of all the players you've covered in terms of StatCast, who are the players you enjoy writing about the most?
When you talk about StatCast, it's hard to, you know, resist talking about the guys who hit the most impressive home runs. And I think, you know, for ever since StatCast started, we've been lucky enough that that time has coincided with the career of Giancarlo Stanton, who, of course, I know you know as the living legend. his
correct.
Work against the Nationals over the years. So, you know, it's been so cool to be able to quantify just how much harder and how much further he's able to hit the ball than basically anyone else. Or at least until this year when, you know, Aaron Judge came along and started, you know, doing some of the same things. So, you know, when it comes to StatCast, guys like that are always real fun to talk about. So, I would say that those guys are at the top of the list.
Now, we don't judge just based on the measuring of home runs. Now, you also talk about speed, throwing and pitching, and I noticed that Billy Hamilton's always up there in terms of his speed. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, a great thing about StatCast in general, I would say, is that, you know, there are times when it comes up with something that maybe surprises you, that shows you that there was something that your eyes were missing about a player that you weren't appreciating.
Mm-hmm.
Something that they can do. On the other hand, a lot of times it does the opposite and it really just confirms, you know, everything that your eyes tell you. You know, you don't need StatCast to watch Billy Hamilton and know that he's fast. You can watch him, you know, run around the bases one time and you know that there's something special there, but then StatCast comes along and really just, you know, confirms that and actually attaches, you know, a number to it so that you can, you know, put it in context. So we have a new metric this year with StatCast called sprint speed,
mm-hmm.
which essentially measures how many feet per second a player is running during the fastest 1 second window, you know, on the run. And, it, you know, Billy Hamilton is right there at the top of the list with Byron Buxton, right around 30 feet per second.
Wow.
So, you know, clearly what everyone's been seeing throughout Billy Hamilton's career, you know, has been backed up by the numbers that we have now.
I'm sure there's some pitchers out there who have impressed you. Could you talk about some of those players?
You know, certainly just from a velocity perspective, you know, Aroldis Chapman always comes to mind. You know, his velocity compared to everyone else is so amazing. You know, MLB.com had to put something it calls the Chapman filter on the leaderboard that we have for the fastest individual pitches because, you know, Chapman's name was on there so many times that you couldn't even see anybody else. So,
oh, wow. Wow. That's amazing.
So he's been so far, at least up until recently, he's been so far ahead of everyone else in that respect. That's always fun to see. But, then we have a metric like spin rate, which can kind of helps to explain, you know, a guy like Max Scherzer has a very high spin four-seam fastball, which, you know, kind of helps illuminate how he's so successful pitching with his fastball up in the zone and getting so many swings and misses and pop flies because when you have a high-spin four-seam fastball, it basically helps give it sort of that rising effect that people talk about, which is really just the ball not dropping as fast as the hitter expects it to.
Right.
So, you know, that's something that, you know, StatCast can bring to the table to help explain, you know, why somebody is so good.
Andrew, final question. There are some old-school people out there who will say, I can judge a player by the eye test. How do you feel about that compared to StatCast?
Well, you know, I think that there's a lot of value in both. You know, I think, you know, I know that there's been so many arguments over the years about stats versus scouts, but I think at this point, you know, most people in the game, if not all, acknowledge that there's a big role for both and plenty of room for those two things to not just coexist, but, you know, work together. There's a lot of value in somebody, you know, being able to watch a player with their own eyes and evaluate them. There's things they might be able to pick out that the numbers can't and vice versa. So, you know, I don't think, you know, the role of scouts isn't going anywhere. And at the same time, I think, you know, the role of StatCast and other metrics is going to continue to grow as we keep improving upon them and refining them. So, you know, I think the teams that are best able to sort of blend those two approaches together are going to be the ones that have the most success in the future.
Andrew Simon, listen, thank you so much for helping us out here, and you take care of yourself.
Absolutely, Bill. Happy to be with you.
Thank you.
My final guest is Reds bench coach Jim Riggleman. He has a lot of good things to say about Reds first baseman Joey Votto. Enjoy the podcast.
My next guest is one of the best managers I ever covered, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart. His name is Jim Riggleman. He's a bench coach for the Cincinnati Reds. Jim, thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, glad to be on, Bill. Good to talk to you.
Jim, although the Reds are not doing well, you have a front row seat watching Joey Votto. And could you talk about the year he's having? Isn't very impressive, not just the home runs, on-base percentage. Talk about what it's like to watch him.
Well, I tell you, Bill, you're right. It's amazing. You know, this is my third year here with the Major League Club. After spending a couple years in the minor leagues with them, and my first experience with Joey was in 15, and he got off to a little bit of a rough start both in 15 and 16, but ended the year as a top three or four MVP candidate. And this year, he's been that way pretty much from mid-April on. It's just unbelievable, Bill, to watch him get on base at this historic rate. He's sticking one or two hits out there a day. He's hitting for power. He's driving in runs. He's getting on base at a 450 clip. It's just amazing. His plate discipline, you know, to lay off chase pitches, you know, guys will get ahead of him in the count and throw some stuff out of the strike zone. And, you know, almost everybody in baseball is going to be fighting those pitches off or chasing, but he just takes them. So he's got a special ability to recognize pitches and be confident in himself to stay back long enough that if he gets beat on a pitch, he's, you know, he just kind of puts it in his think tank and applies it to his next at bat. But just really right there at the top of the list, you know, I've been very fortunate, Bill, to be around some great hitters, Tony Gwynn, Gary Sheffield, and you know, I can name some Nationals players who are, you know, I had the fortune, a good fortune of being around. But Joey's right there at the top of the list of those historical type hitters.
Wow, that's amazing. That is amazing. You know, he's not the only one that's doing well offensively. You have Zach Cozart. I know he's hurt. And you also have Alan Duvall. Could you talk about those two guys?
Yeah, Zach Cozart is back playing. You know, he missed a couple games here and there, but he's having a tremendous year. He's on-base percentage over 400, and that's for him. That was maybe the one thing that wasn't happening before. He wasn't taking a lot of walks, but this year he's hitting for average. He's walking. He's driving in runs. He's playing Gold Glove shortstop, so he's having a great year. Adam Duvall, our left fielder, hitting fourth, protecting Joey in the lineup, and just, you know, it's going to be his second year in a row. He's on pace for over 100 RBIs, and he gets unnoticed because of where we are in the standings, but he's not only been a real productive hitter, he literally is the Gold Glove left fielder in baseball. He's just, I feel like he could have won the award last year, but I don't see how he won't win it this year. He's just been outstanding out there.
Wow. Billy Hamilton, now we know he can run, but what can he do to improve his hitting? I know, and defensively he's good too, but what can he do to improve his hitting?
You know, Bill, I don't really analyze hitting that much. You know, we have hitting coaches and everything. We have pitching coaches. I was always more, and still am, more into the, you know, the details of the game and the strategy and so forth. I think if I were to ever put my opinions in it, it would just muddle things up. And so I basically just look for results. And the only thing I can do is say that Billy's just got to get more success getting on base. When he gets on base, he scores runs at the highest percentage of anybody in baseball. And, you know, that's a heck of a thing. I mean, nobody in baseball gets on base and then scores more than he does. So we just got to find a way for him to get on base more. He has been better. After a very slow start, he's picked it up considerably and does get on base more. He got a couple more hits last night, stole the base, scored a run. So, you know, that's just what he has to do. How he does it, that, you know, that's going to be up to him and the hitting coaches. But, you know, we are a different ball club when he gets on base.
No question about it. And, you know, you have a closer, a great closer. But, man, if you have some pitching, you guys could be really contenders right now. And that has to be frustrating, being a bench coach and helping the manager out. How frustrating is that?
Well, our manager is doing a great job. Brian Price is really, you know, his patience with this situation has been amazing because, you know, we're speaking today after a real meltdown in our pitching last night where we gave up 13 runs in the bullpen. Mm-hmm. And Brian is, you know, he's endured that. But, you know, we just see some light at the end of the tunnel. We got a kid here named Castillo. We've got a couple guys in AAA that we really feel like are going to help us in the near future. Early in the year, our problems were solely in our starting rotation. And our bullpen was really doing well. As of late, our bullpen has faltered. And, you know, even some games where our starters have given us a chance, we've let those games go. You know, I know I can get a little long-winded on this stuff, but basically in a nutshell, it's really hard year to year to put a bullpen together. Some guys we were counting on, mm-hmm. and I think you probably see it there in Washington, some people that maybe you came out of spring training thinking are going to be major contributors to the club. They just have a down year. You don't know what they're going to do the next year, but in that particular year, they're just not getting it done, and that's where we are with our bullpen. And, you know, fortunately, you guys were able to fix that problem, and you got a nice bullpen now to go along with your good starting rotation.
Jim, I like to say that you have a lot left in the tank, and would you like to manage again? I like to see you manage again.
Well, I appreciate that, Bill. Yeah, you know, I've never not wanted to manage. When I finished my time in Washington, I love having a ball club to manage. I did that in AA and AAA for the Reds, and I certainly want to manage. It's not the end of the world feeling that it was many years ago when I was trying to strive to be a manager. I loved it. I loved doing it, but you know, if that opportunity were to arise somewhere, I certainly would jump at it. But, I'm very fortunate and very happy to be doing what I'm doing right now.
I like to say that Jim Riggleman is not a quitter. I'm telling you, I saw him turn the Nationals around. He's one of the reasons the Nationals are where they are right now, and there's no question about it, Jim. Jim, I've learned over the years that you have learned your craft from the Cardinal organization. Could you talk about how much the Cardinals helped you and who'd you learn from?
Yeah, you know, I was very fortunate to work under a guy, two people there, really. One in the minor leagues, George Kissel, that really set the tone for everybody in the Cardinal organization. George passed away a few years ago, but just tremendous teacher of the game. The details of the game, just great baseball conversation with George, and he's impacted so many lives in baseball. And the other person that I was extremely fortunate to work under was Whitey Herzog. Whitey, probably for me, is the best baseball man I've ever been around. I think it was he's really the only reason that I was able to manage in the big leagues, because if I had not worked under his staff as a coach in the late 80s, I did not have a resume for myself that would say, hey, this guy's going to be a major league manager. Whitey really validated me as a major league person by putting me on his staff. I liken it to, if you're an assistant under Bear Bryant back in the day, or if you're an assistant now under Saban in Alabama, you know, you got a chance to get a head job somewhere, and you need that kind of break, and Whitey gave me that break.
You know, Jim, how proud are you that you played a role in the Nationals winning? You played a role from the starting in the beginning in 2011. Could you talk about that?
Well, again, I really appreciate you saying that. I feel like that, during my time there, we were starting to turn the corner a little bit. But, you look at what Frank Robinson and Manny Acta did before I had that position there, and I think everybody had a little part in it. There was a lot of growing pains, and fortunately, my time at the end there, we were starting to win some ball games, but it had so much to do with a few trades that were made right after Manny Acta left, or right before he left. Mike Rizzo made a trade that really helped us for the next couple years, and that was acquiring Sean Burnett from the Pirates,
right?
And Niger Morgan. Niger did a good job for us for a while as a leadoff guy, and Burnett did a great job. Mike brought up Tyler Clippard from the minor leagues. We drafted Drew Storen, and I probably wore him out, but Clippard, Storen, and Burnett were really a huge reason why we won ball games. If we were going to win a game, we had to get those guys involved, and they did get involved.
No question about it. Jim, listen, as always, thank you so much. And I mean it, man. This guy has a sense of humor, too. I really enjoy being around him.
I appreciate it, Bill. I enjoyed my time there very much. Thank you.